welcome to Boston Private Perspectives. I'm Shannon Sakosha, Chief Investment Officer at Boston Private, and today I'm hosting our first quarter Market and Economic Outlook podcast. I'm thrilled to be joined by my Boston Private colleagues from our investment team, Ryan McCulkin, Head of Fixed Income, and Nancy Perez, Senior Portfolio Manager. Thank you both for being here.
Hi, Shannon.
Good afternoon, Shannon.
So, just to kick us off, I'm going to give a quick overview of what happened in 2019 in both the economy and the markets. As many of you likely know, 2019 was an exceptional year for the markets. We had positive gains essentially across the board in whatever asset class you were in. And I can confidently say that for many of us, it was probably the best year for a balanced portfolio that we've seen in our careers. Growth stocks continued their dominance, while small cap stocks underperformed, as they often do during late cycle periods. Those are also have large allocations to financials and healthcare and industrials, all three sectors that lagged in 2019. So it's not necessarily surprising to see that underperformance. We did see a continued lagged effect of emerging markets and international stocks, although I will say that we saw significant strength in the fourth quarter, particularly in emerging markets, which sets the stage a little bit for 2020. In bonds, quality outperformed high yield, which was a difference when we think about an overall risk-on environment, and we'll touch on that a little bit later in the podcast. As we look ahead to 2020, some things that we're considering from an economic perspective, PMIs. We've talked a lot about them over the last couple of years, and we did see a deceleration in the manufacturing economy in 2019, which really hasn't reaccelerated. We have seen some reacceleration outside of the United States in places like China, but we're waiting for that impact here in the United States, which we do expect could come based on what's happening with the trade tensions with China. Inflation remains muted, with wage growth hovering around the 3% mark, and energy prices constrained by large amounts of supply in the market. Housing has appreciated on low supply, and that's created a further runway for future growth. The consumer remains optimistic as employment stays strong, but given the lagging nature of this measure, we're not affording it that much significance as we look forward over the next year and a half or so. With that being said, we think there are three major factors that will impact the markets in 2020, and those are the elections, easing, and the economy. So I'm going to turn it over to Nancy. As we look ahead to 2020, there are these three main areas of emphasis. While all three are critical, I'd like to start with the upcoming U.S. elections. How has the equity market reacted thus far to the current group of Democratic contenders?
Well, Shannon, last year we did see the healthcare industry get somewhat impacted with the Democratic slate, given that there was a lot more Medicare for all and a little bit more socialistic agenda, progressive. Thus far, though, I think the market sort of has settled down, and historically, the markets don't really react to the political environment, to we're a little closer to the elections. At times, typically by May, we might start to see some movement if there's some definition as to what the political outcome would be. But typically, the political environment doesn't affect the market till later on in the year.
And it might be even longer this time around, given the amount of potential, contenders that still remain in the race on the Democratic side. Typically, we would be seeing a bit more narrowing of the field. Admittedly, we've seen a few people drop out recently. But still, there are probably four consistent contenders coming into the top of those polls, which really doesn't speak to an outcome as of yet. Another, perhaps more loaded question, do you believe that the markets will react positively if it appears President Trump will be reelected as we get closer to the election?
Yes, I do. He has a pretty positive business agenda, and we saw early on in his presidency that he was very pro-business with the tax cuts that we've had, and the regulation made a big impact as well. And he sort of threw a wrinkle in it with the trade policy, but I think with this new trade truce and the USMCA coming through, we sort of have that as a tailwind. And if he gets a second term, I do think he will try to get some middle tax cuts, which he sort of started proposing last year. We might start to see some of that talk. So I think that would all be a catalyst going forward.
It sounds like, though, a continuation of uncertainty around trade could be one of the major determinants on how the markets feel about a potential reelection. And so as we have the phase one deal likely already signed by the time you're hearing this podcast, it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds over the next several months. Ryan, switching gears a little bit, one of the concerns that we've had over the course of 2019 and into 2020 has been around this perceived slowing of the U.S. economy, as I mentioned in my earlier comments. How are we feeling about the economy as we move into 2020?
Right. So I think we're feeling pretty good overall. The job market looks pretty healthy. CEO and small business confidence is improving slowly. You referenced the consumer. The consumer is healthy. They're making more money. They're saving it. Importantly, especially on the fixed income side, credit conditions are favorable. So in fixed income markets, we often look at investment grade and high yield spreads to sort of assess market health. And overall, spreads are tight, reflecting elevated risk appetite, and an overall health of the market. So it's definitely functioning properly. One of the questionable sectors in the fixed income markets, especially corporate bond markets, has been energy. For much of last year, there were some questionable issuers that had been shut out of the market. But even to start 2020, you are seeing some of those companies be able to borrow in 2020. So pretty positive sign there.
It's been really interesting to see what's happened to the energy market over the last few years. As the energy renaissance was supposed to be one of the next catalysts for growth in the United States, and all we've done is create an overabundance of supply and therefore lower the price of oil. And now, I think that companies, to your point, are starting to grapple with the expected lower costs of oil and how profitable their businesses can be. So I think it's a sector to watch. I mean, I know we're watching this, and Nancy's nodding on the equity side as well. But energy is certainly going to remain a topic of conversation over the next several quarters. Nancy, with global monetary policy remaining easy, what equity sectors stand to benefit this year?
This year, I think global easing is helping all markets. I think on the U.S. side, information technology, we're still positive on, only because it has its own fundamentals, which continue to be strong no matter what politics and no matter what the easing cycle. But particular to the easing cycle, we do think that industrials may start to outperform. As Ryan mentioned, CEO confidence has been at a historic lows because of the trade policy. And like I mentioned earlier with the USMCA and the China and US truce, we do think that CEOs might start to feel more confident. And you've also actually seen, as you mentioned, China PMIs sort of bottoming and starting to do better. You're seeing Europe. I think if we get a pretty good Brexit deal, we may have some catalysts on the manufacturing side. So we're starting to become a little bit more constructive on the industrials. And then financials, I think that's also going to be a wild card. If we start to see the yield curve steepen a little bit more, I think financials can start to get some momentum going into it. In general, you'll have seen that the markets were up, 30% last year. Financials didn't do as well. And despite that 30% return, we've actually had a lot of money flows going into cash and bond markets, and the equity markets really haven't seen that. So I think if we get the trade beyond the horizon, we'll start to see some momentum in the financials, and you could start to see that sector do well.
One of the questions that we've gotten a lot over the last several years has been sort of the opportunity for purchasing stocks outside of the United States. And I know it's getting a lot of traction right now in our world. So, do you anticipate that, those international developed or emerging market stocks could outperform? And what circumstances could potentially create that opportunity?
Well, There have been two reasons why emerging markets have underperformed, largely because the dollar has been relatively strong. And as the dollar goes, typically the emerging markets go the opposite way. So the dollar does appear to have been, starting to weaken a little bit. So even if it stays stable at these lower levels, we do think that emerging market can have some potential. The other thing that we're seeing as well is that there are a lot of emerging market central banks easing as well. So there's some catalyst that could provide some additional upside. And then, another factor that's also that's helping emerging markets is last year their earnings were down over 20%. So now we're looking at easy comparisons relative to last year, and you're seeing some relatively good attractive valuations. So they're selling at multi-year lows, and we could actually see some, you know, some money going back into emerging markets looking for some value.
It's going to be very interesting. One of the things that you've seen, you know, in this lower yield environment, in this lower interest rate environment that we've had over the last decade, has been the increase in debt that's been taken on by emerging markets. So, you know, that could potentially create some consternation for investors as we move forward over the next several years. But right now, the equity market looks pretty attractive. So, Ryan, with yield curve inversion behind us, it's been quite the topic of conversation over the last year or so. Where does the bond market go from here? And what would you tell investors that are looking to invest in bonds?
Right. So it's hard to believe that the yield curve was inverted as recently as August. You know, it certainly feels like a distant memory. I think you have to give the Fed credit, though. They were probably more reactionary than they have been in the past and really want to be. You know, but the committee saw what was going on in the markets, saw economies slowing domestically and abroad, and proactively cut that short-term rate three times in 2019. So by doing so, they have re-steepened the yield curve and stoked some confidence in the markets. You mentioned expectations. You know, to the extent that the yield curve reflects future growth expectations, a positive sloping upward yield curve is a positive sign for risk assets. You know, going forward, we think that yields are probably a little bit too low based on a U.S. economy that really is doing just fine. But they are being held lower by global growth that's been sluggish, especially in Europe. You have trade tensions that, of course, are a major factor. You know, if you start to see some improvements in those two areas, you could see some higher rates. You know, in terms of the shape of the curve, you know, the Fed's going to hold down the front end of the curve. They've basically said as much. They've expressed concern that inflation is too low. They're not going to raise rates until they see persistent signs of inflation, which has been hard to come by. So, you know, on tap for 2020, we probably think you get, you know, marginally higher rates, a steeper curve, and of course, probably some volatility on the way.
If we look back to some of the comments that we had in 2018, I think collectively as a team, we were concerned about the economy. We were concerned about the potential slowing of the economy into 2020. And I think if you looked at a lot of economists, they really felt like this was the year that some of the excesses, you know, whether it was valuation in the equity market or some of the monetary stimulus that had been put into place, and particularly the fiscal stimulus that was put into place at the end of 2017 that yielded little in the way of results as it relates to an increase in business investment and CapEx, was really going to come home to roost this year. And I think what we've seen is we've seen a change, especially with some of the reaccelerating economic data in the back half of 2019, that I think most people feel that that recession is pushed out into at least 2020 potentially. When we think about our overall allocations, this has colored the way that we're constructing portfolios right now. Given the valuations, particularly here in the United States, we remain neutral in equities. We're certainly underweight in certain parts of the equity market, including small cap stocks, which traditionally underperform in late cycle. And so therefore, if we're going to overemphasize something in our equity allocation, it won't be in small caps. I think we're continuing to be fairly neutral in areas like real assets. I think we get a lot of questions about whether we should have gold in your portfolio as an insulator. And, you know, at this point in time, we don't see a real reason to add a meaningful allocation to gold within portfolios. And then, you know, on the fixed income side, we've been continuing to upgrade our quality over the last couple of years, which I think has been in the right direction, and we'll continue to do that. But we will continue to hold high yield bonds in our portfolios as well. As Ryan mentioned, you know, the credit market seems healthy, if not perhaps a little bit overvalued. And so as we go into this year, I'd say our stance is similar to what you saw in your portfolio in 2019, but we remain conscious that with a reacceleration in economic growth, we could see better opportunities for equities, and we could actually see multiple expansion, although I think we'd really like to see some earnings growth this year. So I want to thank Ryan and Nancy for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
It was great to be back. Thanks for having me.
With that, if you have any questions or thoughts on our conversation today, you can find me on Twitter at Shannon Sakosha. You can also read our 2020 outlook by visiting bostonprivate.com. And if you want all of this information delivered right to your inbox, I encourage you to sign up for our quarterly newsletter, also on bostonprivate.com. And last thing, be sure to subscribe to Boston Private Perspectives on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or Spotify, wherever you prefer to listen. That's it for our first quarter 2020 outlook. We'll see you in April for an update on the first quarter and what we're watching into the second quarter. Thank you.